Hey everybody, this is Maggie. And my show, The Unsolicited Opinion, can be heard here on AM 1360 WNJC every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. and Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. You know, Barack Obama wants to redistribute the wealth. Well, I disagree. I think you need to earn what you get in life. So join me because I'm going to be redistributing the truth one word at a time on The Unsolicited Opinion here on WNJC
1360. People who say that if you debate and you disagree with this administration, somehow you're not patriotic, and we should stand up and say we are Americans and we have a right to debate and disagree with any administration.
Hey everybody, this is Maggie and welcome to The Unsolicited Opinion. How you doing tonight? I bet there's a lot of you who are glad that it is finally Friday, huh? You know, my guest tonight, I've had him on before. His name is Oleg Atbashian, and he is the author of the book entitled Shakedown Socialism, and he is also the creator of the website entitled ThePeople'sCube.com. And I thought it was real important, because of what Oleg's background is, I thought it was real important to bring him back on because he has such valuable information that I know most of the people that are listening, and I know most of the people in this country really don't have any idea what life will be like if the end game is achieved by the powers that be, and by that I mean Barack Obama and all of his, all the people who are behind the curtain that drives this engine on the road that we are on. And I thought it was critical because Oleg's message, Oleg hails from the former USSR. He was born and raised in the Ukraine, and he had been a teacher there, a translator. He was a freelance journalist, and he at one time was even a propaganda artist, creating graphical agitprop for the local party committee in Siberia. Oleg came to the USA in 1994 because, of course, he was hoping to live in a country ruled by reason and common sense. He lives in New York City right now, and, of course, he's going to be on the show shortly. We'll be bringing him on. But I was reading his book, which is Shakedown Socialism. Actually, one of my listeners bought several and gave me one. And one of the quotes in this book, and it's kind of interesting, it really is, it's from a former community organizer. Now, do we not all know who the community organizer in chief is here in the USSA? Gee, that's a slip of the tongue, huh? It's going to be the USSA if we can't stop what's happening. But this man named Nikolai Bukharin, who was a community organizer in the USSR, had made a statement that I thought was kind of telling, and it's very indicative of what happens. He said back in 1917 that we asked for freedom of the press, thought, and civil liberties in the past because we were in the opposition and we needed these liberties to conquer. Now that we have conquered, there is no longer any need for such civil liberties. And, you know, that's very telling, because if you look at what's happening in our country today, this is the United States of America. We're not in the USSR. But in our country today, what's going on is, hey, don't they want to silence the opposition? Don't they want to shut down the internet? Don't they try to silence anybody who's opposed to them and disagrees with them politically? Don't they call everybody by names? Don't they say that we are racists or we're extremists or we are, terroristic? Don't they do those kinds of things? I guess they don't think that free thought and civil disobedience, I guess they don't think those things are necessary now that they're in power, do they? However, it was so interesting because those are the types of things those community activists, the ACORN people and the SEIU and all those other people who helped propel the organizer-in-chief into power, well, they had no problem doing all those kinds of things, did they? Anyway, we are going to go to break, and when we come back, we are going to be joined by Oleg Atbashian, and we will be back in about a minute and a half. So hang on, everybody. You're listening to The Unsolicited Opinion, and my name is Maggie, and here we redistribute the truth.
We'll attention, right, business owners and individuals who owe the IRS. Do you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes? You need aggressive representation. Call Certified Tax now at 800-221-9442 and speak to one of our tax attorneys, enrolled agents, or tax professionals who specialize in tax liens, back taxes, tax debt, wage garnishment, and collections. We won't waste a minute helping you with your tax problems. We'll be on the phone with the IRS within 30 minutes of you becoming a client. We've settled millions of dollars of tax issues for a fraction of the cost. Find the peace of mind knowing the IRS will not be knocking on your door. Protect your home, business, and family today. We know the tax laws, and we act fast. Call today for your free, no-obligation consultation. 800-221-9442. Remember, we'll be on the phone with the IRS within 30 minutes of you becoming a client. That's guaranteed. Call Certified Tax at 800-221-9442. That's 800-221-9442. Again, 800-221-9442.
Some have sailed down through history. Hey, everybody, this is Maggie, and you are listening to The Unsolicited Opinion. And as always, my website is three words, The unsolicitedopinion.com. You have to have the word "the" in there, or you're not going to get to the right place. Go to my website, podcasts of my show, and as well as links to all of my guests are up on my website shortly after the show ends. And of course, there's a couple other things I need to tell you about. I have a sponsor. The sponsor is Digger's Realm. It's a great website. They have been following illegal immigration in this country, as well as other topics, but primarily focusing on illegal immigration. DiggersRealm.com for the last 8 years. So if you really want to know what's going on, go there, because he's right on the money with his research. Also, there's another organization that you really need to pay attention to as well, and this is a group called A Hero's Welcome, and that is aheroes-welcome.org. They welcome our soldiers back home, and so all of you who have seen those people on the news who go down to the airports and say hello to our returning soldiers, please call them up, aheroes-welcome.org, and help them out, and go there and say thank you for the people who stand in support of us. I am joined now by Oleg Atbashian, and he is the author of the book Shakedown Socialism, and you can find that on his website, shakedownsocialism.com, as well as he is the creator of the website entitled thepeoplescube.com, so please check that out too. Buy his book. It is a great book. And check out his other website, The People's Cube. So, Oleg, welcome back. I'm glad that you were able to come back.
Yes, hi, Maggie.
How you
hi,
doing?
Hi, listeners. I'm doing good.
You know, I don't know if you're familiar with the song or not, but when I'm 53. When I was growing up, Doris Day sang a song, How Much Is That Doggy in the Window? And this afternoon, I was actually thinking about when I was a kid, I used to see pictures of, hey, say, the USSR, or, you know, those areas, and I'd see just a lone sausage hanging in a window and people standing in line.
Mm-hmm.
Waiting to get at a piece of that sausage. And I don't know what made me put the two together today. I guess I'm just in kind of a humorous, kind of silly mood, but that's what I was thinking of. How much is that doggy? How much is that sausage in the window, you know? And isn't that about what it's about? I mean, it ends up being one sausage for the masses?
The human life is reduced, or human existence is reduced to the necessity of obtaining the essentials for your life and spending hours in lines, then you have no more rights left to do anything else.
No.
Because food is essential, so in order, if you spend half of your life just to acquire food, not to starve, then you're deprived of your ability to do anything else with your life. And that is a terrible thing. So those who denigrate the material aspect of life, they completely disregard that the material aspects need to be satisfied first before you can do anything spiritual and to try to achieve heights in culture and art and everything else. When people are reduced to the life of ants in an anthill, then you can forget about spirituality.
You know, I was driving home. I actually was at a school board meeting last night because there's a charter school that wants to open up in the school district that I'm in. You know, I was driving back, and I was listening to this talk radio show, and they were talking about how it was so unfair that all of these evil rich people in this country, well, they had so much, and they should be taxed more because it's just not fair. You know, and I think to myself, when I hear these people talking about this, it's pure envy. It really is. They are envious and they are jealous, and they think that they are entitled to the efforts of someone else's labor, the rewards of the fruits of someone else's labor. And it's just a really amazing thing to me, Oleg, because it's never been what's driven me. I've always been, hey, if somebody else has more than me, and that's fine, good for them, go for it. You want to go rise to the top, you want to make millions of dollars, good for you. I don't care if they're rich. I don't care if they buy and have a fancy car. I don't care if they wear expensive clothes. Who the hell cares?
Right, and humanity has developed this principle and that you shouldn't covet, because that is not, and well, it depends if you're religious, that was a commandment that was given by God through Moses. Those who are not religious may still think of it as just a rule that allowed humanity to survive and continue to be humans. Do not covet is one of them.
Exactly.
Along do not kill and do not do other bad things. And so that covetousness is the one of the pillars of progressivism and redistributional wealth. And that is what makes the message that Obama spreads and all the others like him so attractive to others. This almost religious exhilaration of the crowd when Obama spoke. Remember how they were almost reaching the point of ecstasy.
Yeah, tears streaming down their cheeks as if Jesus had just arrived.
I was thinking that the message seemed almost religious to them, because what he was doing, he was creating, opening them to the new morality. He was removing those commandments from their moral code, and that changed a lot of things. That opened a lot of doors to them. You know, if you remove those restrictions, those taboos that are there for a reason, then you sort of see new horizons before you, and it is now good to covet. It is open to everybody, so we can do a lot of things with that. There is a whole new life ahead of us if we remove that commandment from our life. But what it will lead to, they do not think. But no. That will lead to a complete destruction of the society.
Well, no, because all they think of is they're going to sit fat and happy, they're going to sit at home, somebody else is going to pay their rent, somebody else is going to pay for their food, somebody else is going to pay for their cable TV, and their car, and their ice cream, and their clothes, and their movie tickets, so they don't care. They don't have to work. Hey, let that stooge go work.
Somewhere we'll take care of it. There is always this kind of uncertain entity, some vague entity that will take care of everybody. But what is this entity? Nobody knows, and they don't even want to think that far, because maybe it's even scary to think that far.
Well,
so they're just hoping that there is this hope that they will be taken care of. But what will come in return? Have you seen, how long ago have you seen Pinocchio?
Oh, God, Oleg, it's been years. Since I was a little kid, I certainly remember how big Pinocchio's nose had gotten, but it's been since I was a kid, and that's a long time ago.
But do you remember that episode when there was this crook who was gathering children who were misbehaving and telling them that he will take them to this land where they will be happy and will be provided for, everything will be for them to use and consume, and there will be no rules and restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
And he collected a lot of kids. He took them to this island where they were given a lot of toys and food. But as the night came, all those children were being transformed into donkeys and then sent to work at the quarries. I don't remember what it was, a salt mines or...
I don't remember, honestly, Oleg, but I get the point you're making.
That, if you review that just one episode, find it on YouTube, that's the greatest metaphor for what Obama and the Democrat Party are doing with the people who are voting, for who are listening to that message.
Free lunch.
They're turning people into donkeys.
Yep. They've got a neon sign that says free lunch, free lunch. You won't have to do anything and everything will be provided for you. And that's just absolutely, it's an illusion. It doesn't exist. It's a fantasy. It's just this fantasy that they have created. It's like a Hollywood production.
That's what I was trying to do in my book, debunk the fantasies and show them as optical illusions. I'm showing some examples of optical illusions there that ideologues of progressivism are using, not in a literal sense, but basically it's a trick of the eye. It's putting an object in a different perspective or superimposing some sort of out-of-context linear perspective taken from some other idea, and then things look very different, and a smaller object can appear much larger, and so on. But, of course, talking about pictures on the radio is not a very productive thing. You have to see the books, see the pictures to imagine them. But I remember before I joined, I heard you were talking about this quote by Nikolai Bukharin.
Yes.
Who was one of Lenin's and Stalin's big friends, and he was one of the biggest party ideologues. And he started as sort of a community organizer, as you said, and then he said that we demanded liberties and free press only because we needed those liberties to conquer. And now that we have created the revolution, we have conquered it, we have no more use for those liberties. And that was true. Right after the revolution, as the communists took power, all the liberties were, all the liberties disappeared.
Well,
and the dictatorship of the proletariat, so-called, was established. And here in this context, I'd like to say one thing. People are asking me what's happening in the U.S. today similar to the life in the USSR. You know, people want to know the signs of socialism. But the similarities are mostly in the trends and not in the details. And the details are different because here the left is still struggling to gain a full control of the country, while in the USSR it already had the full control. So it was the same difference as that between the defense and offense. You know, there are different tactics when there are two armies that are fighting against each other, and one is in offense and the other one is defense. They use different strategies. They position their resources differently. While in the USSR, socialists and the communists were protecting what they had, the same people here in the U.S. are still in the attack mode, and that's why the signs are not the same. Like, for instance, in the USSR, there was no tolerance towards the moral and mental decadence that is being promoted here. You wouldn't last long there if you were to try to promote pacifism, multiculturalism, breaking up the society into minority pressure groups, destruction of the family, depravity in the media and TV, pornography, cultivating the sense of unearned entitlements, legalization of drugs, gays in the military, all those New Age religions, waving flags of foreign countries. Union strikes were not permitted either. Unions were suppressed. There were no frivolous lawsuits. There was no ACLU either. And no one would even dream about suing the government and receiving millions in compensation for emotional distress or punitive damages. And what is left currently promoting in this country are the things that help to weaken and destroy the system.
Well, all of those things you mentioned are the strategies employed to destroy it, and then when they have total control, then they'll outlaw all the things they used to get them where they were going.
Right. Remember, take the Cloward and Piven strategy to collapse the system by draining it through ineffective and counterproductive government payouts. It was forced on the society using this fallacious moral argument of economic justice with which I actually deal in the book a lot. And these are strategies not for running the system, but for destabilizing and destroying it. And so when I see what the current administration is doing to the country, I have to wonder whether those actions are meant to strengthen the system or to destroy it. And if you can always see what policy is aimed at strengthening the country and which one is aimed at weakening it, and there you are. There you have your answer.
Exactly. All anybody needs to do is look at who the players are in the game, and then you'll know what their ideology is.
Right.
Listen, on that note, Oleg, let's go to break, and then we'll be back in about a minute and a half. Everybody, you are listening to The Unsolicited Opinion. My name is Maggie, and my guest this afternoon is Oleg Atbashian, and we will be right back in about a minute and a half. So hang on, everybody.
Listeners, here's a simple way to earn quit your job money from home. IncomeAtHome34.com has come to us for listeners who want to work from home.
I have to tell you, it's the best decision that I ever made because we replaced my income and my husband's income. This business has allowed us to quit our jobs, and we're both at home full-time and loving it. Best decision I ever made.
They're even giving away $1,000 to someone just for checking them out. Visit IncomeAtHome34.com. That's IncomeAtHome34.com.
A long time forgotten, the dreams of this fell by. The good life he promised ain't what she's living today. Really. But she never complains of the bad times or the bad things he's done, Lord. She just talks about the good times they've had and all the good times to come. She's a good-hearted woman in love with a good-time man. She loves him in spite of his ways she don't understand.
Hey, everybody, this is Maggie, and you are listening to The Unsolicited Opinion, and I am joined this afternoon by Oleg Atbashian, and he is the author of the book entitled Shakedown Socialism, and the website to buy this book is shakedownsocialism.com, and you need to go and buy this book. If you want to know why, how, what, when, where, what's going on in this country, and exactly what the origins and the ideology is, and to really get a real clear rudimentary understanding of it, you need to go and buy his book. It's an easy read. It's a great read. It's so well written. You must go to his website, shakedownsocialism.com. Buy his book. You want to know how to fight back? Buy the book, or you'll be forewarned. So, hey, Oleg, I'm so glad that you're back with me again this afternoon.
Me too.
So, you know, one of the things that I was reading about in your book was your references to George Orwell's Newspeak, redefining existing meanings, and that, of course, I'm referring to the George Orwell's 1984, for those of you who are listening and were wondering what the hell is she talking about. I'm talking about George Orwell's references to newspeak and oldspeak. And it's interesting that you talk about that in your book.
Mm-hmm. I mention it in a book a few times, but I have an unfinished article that had the potential to become another book. about how the Obama administration policies are basically the reflection of all the ideas that Orwell put in his 1984. And so I go point by point, the newspeak, the doublethink, using the crisis in order to promote your ideas. Finding an enemy and focusing on hating someone, like there used to be a George Bush, now there are Tea Parties, and a lot of other things. So George Orwell described actually a country, how Britain would look under Stalin's rule. I mean, under rule of a dictator who would be similar to Joseph Stalin. And that is not always clear to Americans who are reading it. Because when I first read the book, when it was first translated into Russian somewhere in the end of the 80s, already during the time of Perestroika and Glasnost, when I still lived there, I didn't find that book even all that exciting, because it was basically a restatement of a lot of things that were happening in the USSR under Stalin. And when all the crimes of communism and Stalinism were being revealed in the newspapers at the time, in Russian, reading those newspapers was even more interesting than reading a novel about some big brother dictator in a made-up country by Orwell. So it was like a detective story where every time we would be treated to a new puzzle, a new blank spot, the so-called blank spots in our history that were being whited out before, previously, mm-hmm. and now they're being filled in. And look at how in America the left is revising history and removing things from existing historic events, how they're either ignoring them completely or redefining them for us, or changing the magnitudes of different events. They're very good at playing with our minds that way. And, you know, just some heads are made that way. They contain an enormous number of facts, but all these facts never bind with one another into a fertile soil from which original ideas will grow. Each piece of information or some received ideas exist independently from the others. All of them always shifting and rolling around, unconnected, like grains of sand,
mm-hmm.
forming these ephemeral dunes in the lifeless deserts of their minds. And the owners of such heads like to call themselves open-minded, and they like to meet with other people like them, the open-minded ones, and they open their minds to each other and admire each other's fanciful, sandy mindscapes. And you shake that head, and the sand will just get tossed in a different way, in another quirky pattern, and another whimsical outlines will appear. And so without any change in content, a semblance of new ideas will emerge by virtue of exposing previously covered facts and covering the previously exposed ones. And that is how a lot of leftist brains operate.
Well, I'm sure you're probably familiar with when Michelle Obama had said, well, we need to change our history and we need to change our traditions. And if anybody heard that and stepped back and step back away from it, the emotion associated with it, and just step back and say, wait a second, why would we want to do that?
Well,
why would we want to change?
Why we want to do that? But another thing, also an important factor here, is that it betrays the perception of a human mind as a social construct that is developing, and that the human mind is the way it is, and the human values are the way they are, not because of our common human nature, but because they were structured that way by society. That's what cultural Marxists think, that human mind is a social construct, and so it can be modified and changed any way you want. And that is what also the communists in the Soviet Union thought, because one of the three preconditions to building communism was the development of a new man. And this new man was supposed to have a different type of mind, completely altruistic, based on a different understanding of the world and history, and having different values from the modern man, because the modern man would never be able to live in a truly communist society as they imagine it in the utopia. And so what the Soviet schools were trying to do for 70 years was to develop a new man by brainwashing children and putting all those changed, revised facts into their heads. But still, it didn't work. In all 70 years, the new man didn't emerge, because it's impossible, because our human nature is unchangeable. Our values stem from our life experiences, our interactions with the material world. And so they are objectively unchangeable. They will always be the same. They cannot be changed. Our minds are not social constructs, as they believe. But now look at what the schools are doing, what the schools, the public schools in America are doing. They are operating on exactly the same principles. They teach children revised facts, revisionist history. They hide some facts, enlarge the magnitude of some other facts. And so children grow up having a perverted understanding of this world. But luckily, the human nature is on our side, so a lot of them, as once they start working, enter the real life, they kind of recover from all that brainwashing that they've been exposed to. But some don't recover, and they continue to believe in all those false ideas and fallacies. And that's the crime that is being committed on the minds of the children and of the entire population of this country through this re-educational efforts. And Obama just stated her adherence to those principles, that a human mind is a social construct, and so we can play with it any way we want it by putting specially filtered information into it. So there is your answer.
On that note, Oleg, let's go to another break. I want to get another break in here real quick. We are speaking this afternoon with Oleg Atbashian. He is the author of Shakedown Socialism. You can buy his great book on his website, shakedownsocialism.com. Everybody, you are listening to The Unsolicited Opinion, and my name is Maggie, and we'll be back in about a minute, so hang on.
Attention business owners and individuals who owe the IRS. Do you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes? You need aggressive representation. Call Certified Tax now at 800-221-9442 and speak to one of our tax attorneys, enrolled agents, or tax professionals who specialize in tax liens, back taxes, tax debt, wage garnishment, and collections. We won't waste a minute helping you with your tax problems. We'll be on the phone with the IRS within 30 minutes of you becoming a client. We've settled millions of dollars of tax issues for a fraction of the cost. Find the peace of mind knowing the IRS will not be knocking on your door. Protect your home, business, and family today. We know the tax laws, and we act fast. Call today for your free, no-obligation consultation. 800-221-9442. Remember, we'll be on the phone with the IRS within 30 minutes of you becoming a client. That's guaranteed. Call Certified Tax at 800-221-9442. That's 800-221-9442. Again, 800-221-9442.
This is the reason I made all that mistakes.
I've always been crazy in the trouble that it's put me through. Been busted for things that I did and I didn't do. I can't say I'm proud of all of the things that I've done.
Hey, everybody, this is Maggie, and you are listening to The Unsolicited Opinion. As always, you can hear me on this radio show at 8 o'clock on Wednesday nights. Of course, today is 5 o'clock on Fridays, and you can hear me on Sundays at noon on micro1650am.com, and my show is replayed on Monday through Friday on nettalkworld.com at 4 o'clock and talkstreamlive.com. So listen, check out those other places as well. My sponsor of this show is diggersrealm.com. That's DiggersRealm.com. Check out his website if you want to be in the know on illegal immigration and the DREAM Act and all that other good stuff or bad stuff related to illegal immigration. Please go to my sponsor's website, diggersrealm.com. And Digger is into redistributing the truth as well as I am, so I'm sure you're going to read the truth there, I can guarantee that. And I, as always, I am joined this afternoon by Oleg Atbashian, so please go to his website, shakedownsocialism.com, buy his book. He is a wealth of knowledge. So you left off, or we left off before we went to the break, Oleg. We were kind of talking about what was going on in the schools and how they are essentially erasing our history and altering facts and indoctrinating the kids.
Yes, and I have children myself, and I myself see what the results are, so I'm trying to counteract that brainwashing with the facts that I know about life that I learned. Some of that I learned in school, but again, our education was also pretty much ideologically shaped, or misshaped rather, and I had to go through a very long and painful process of reevaluating my values at some point of living in the USSR and relearning about life and history from a lot of different sources. But of course, you can't just take one book and believe everything that's in there. You have to take a lot of different sources and see how all that information works together in one organic system with some consistently structured values, because oftentimes ideas contradict each other, and so you have to go through this kind of what Socrates discovered back in 5th century B.C., that you have to question your beliefs and eliminate contradicting theories and hypotheses all the time by asking yourself questions.
Well, you know, one of the things that I think, Oleg, and I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, maybe my assessment of the American people is inaccurate, I don't know, but one of the things that I think that has created the led to the creation or the ability for the people who are in power and Obama and his comrades to succeed as well as they have succeeded thus far is the fact that I think the American people have naively taken a lot of things over the years for a long, long time, not just the last two since Obama rose to power. But we've taken things at face value and not questioned them as critically as we should have in so many different instances, and I think that's been you know, I think there's a lot of reasons why we didn't, because we lived in such a fortunate, a very prosperous, in such fortunate circumstances, led people to just become, I don't know, I don't think lazy is the right word that I'm looking for. I think we've just become, you know, just it was just easier to believe than it was to question and distrust and mistrust and you know what I'm trying to say? I don't know if I'm making myself clear or not.
Yeah, Americans are, on the most part, trusting people. And I found it out for myself when I didn't have to, like, from where I come from, if you are an expert in a certain field and or you have a certain profession, you can only prove that by providing the papers that show that you know something or you can do something. Here you can claim that you do something and people will trust you, and you'll just have to stand up to your claim and prove by your actions that you can do all the things you claim you can.
And they'll pay you a lot of money in the interim, too, right?
Right. So that's like nobody taught you probably how to become a talk show host. You just claim that you are one, and you're going on the show every day or like several times a week, and you're proving every time that you can do it, and now you're a pretty good talk show host. So there is no paper that comes with it. Now, applying the same principle to politics, clever politicians, of course, will use that and claim that they are for this and for that, and people may believe them, letting those politicians to prove their capabilities to help the people. But there is a lot of swindle involved, and there are ways to fool a lot of people for a lot of times. You know, you can't fool all the people all the time, but you can fool them for a pretty long time. And the progressives have managed to do just that. The progressive movement appeared in the 19th century, and it's still able to not only to attract people, but even to change the perception of a lot of Americans and make them forget what the original document of America was, and that the people were supposed to be free to pursue their own happiness, and the government had no part in it, except that the government was supposed to provide freedom to the people to pursue their happiness. But the progressive view is very different. It's that the government must provide for everything, provide happiness to you. And that is a very different idea, and yet a lot of Americans who were brought up on progressive values believe that the future of this country and the entire world is some sort of socialism where all the wealth is being redistributed fairly and the government is in charge of it, of course, because who else?
Well, you know, for the people who believe that, Oleg, it's really always amazing to me because they don't step back and think, like, you know, say you had your own business and you made $100,000 a year net profit that was yours to keep at the end of your year. Now, if 95,000 of that $100,000 was going to be taken away from you, what would be your motivation to continue to do that? There would be no motivation to continue to do what you were doing to generate a net profit of $100,000
right.
a year.
Right. And so the socialists in this country are cleverly trying to use the business people as milk cows, allowing them to keep the minimum that would still make keep their businesses more or less operational, and then taking away the rest. Notice how Obama is now portrayed as a defender of free markets, that he agrees that the tax cuts are good. But this just repeats this prophetic situation described in Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand, where she showed very well how all these socialist progressive crooks realize that living according to their own principles is not possible, and changing the country according to those principles of economic equality and redistribution of wealth will just destroy the economy and make a ruin out of everything, and people will just starve. Then they realize that, so what they do is they claim that they do support capitalism, they do support free markets, but of course they do it in a way that would allow them to keep control of them. Like, we support the markets as long as we control them. But if you control them, they're not free markets.
No, they're not at all.
And so they're kind of all immersing the country in this contradictory system. It's called the mixed economy, with elements of free markets and socialism at the same time. And so what they do is they allow businesses to exist at a certain minimum so that they would be able to milk them.
Oh.
They are just like farmers. But farmers at least grow and take care of their cattle, but these people are not. They just moved in and took over whatever existed, was created before them by others, and just take over and start milking and start using it for their own power. And that leads, of course, to the creation of crony capitalism, which is very different from the real idea of capitalism.
Well, that's the whole idea of public-private partnerships, because then the select few who have partnered with the government, the corporations that have gotten in bed with the government, well, then they are the chosen ones, aren't they? And aren't they the ones that are allowed to prosper, and all the others, all their competitors, fall by the wayside because they don't have an in?
Right. That's,
you know, they don't know who the race is fixed for the corporations that are in bed with the government. The you know, they already know the
exactly.
winner. The winner is already in bed with the government.
Exactly. And that's, again, I'm going back to my book where I'm stating that the corporations by themselves are neither good nor bad. They're neither good nor evil. They're just entities that are created to generate money for shareholders. And when the government creates conditions for those corporations to compete with one another, not on the free market, not by innovation or increasing the productivity of labor, but by a certain pool with the legislators who create laws that give advantages to certain corporations over the others. And once you enter that field, it becomes very tricky and complicated. And that's when the corporations are also, in order to keep generating profit, they have to play this game. And so it's like they're playing the game on the field that is supposed to be even, you know, like level playing field.
Mm-hmm.
And then the government comes in as a referee and starts changing the rules in the middle of the game and adding points to one team and subtracting from another team and putting shackles on one team and then digging holes in the middle of the field and creating a hill elsewhere in order to make it even for everybody. And then what we see is not an even or level playing field at all. It's all corrupt, rigged game. But who's to blame for it? It's not the players. The players are just trying to make the best out of the situation that they have, of the rules that they're given, of the landscape on which they're playing. The ones who are to blame are the ones who are in charge of that field and who are changing all those rules and rigging the game. The more you remove the regulations and the more fair the rules of competition are, that are not related to the government in any way, the more honest business will be, the more honest people will be, and the more fair the distribution of earned wealth will be. But all this redistribution is focused about giving people unearned things that they never worked for. And that's what what unions are about, that distributing unearned entitlements among its own members at the expense of the rest of the country, where we all have to support the higher prices with our own money, even though we may not be getting the same benefits as the union members do.
Well, you know, if you look around the country now, and I was reading an article, I can't think of the name of the city, and I think it was Rhode Island, actually, but I mean, they're ready to go bankrupt, they're ready to go belly up, and they're trying to figure out how they're going to get out from behind the eight ball, and of course, it's because they have, you know, all these entitlements and the pensions and that for all of their city employees and that stuff that, of course, they can't meet those obligations because they gave away the farm, and you know, everybody gives away the farm to get elected, and then pretty soon you got to pay the piper. It just doesn't work. Eventually,
yeah.
It collapses. It's inevitable. I mean, it is like night follows day. It is inevitable that these things will come to pass. There's no other way around it.
It is unsustainable. Living by unearned income is unsustainable. It just lasts for a while. Like the socialists here like to tell us how great life in Europe is, or Sweden, it's their favorite country. But look at what's happening in Europe and in Sweden, too. It's a temporary. Europe has existed in this shape, the way it is. It's not even real socialism. It's, again, it's a mixed economy. It's just it has more elements of socialism than America does. But it has lived that way for a comparatively short, brief, historic period. They haven't reached the end yet, but they're already reaching that end. You can see what happened in Greece and now in France and Britain and Ireland. People are now realizing that they've lived beyond their means, and they've consumed unearned entitlements so much that they're bankrupt. And where do they take that money? Who is going to work to support them at their old age if they had such a great time they never brought children to this world and the population growth in Europe is negative, especially, like, it's surprising, but Italy and Spain, the countries that you would think stereotypically have big families with lots of children, that is no longer true.
No.
They hardly ever even have one child in the family.
Yep. And then, of course, then all the immigrants that are, making the mass exodus out of the Middle East and Africa to go to those countries, you know, they certainly have no interest in sustaining the culture that they've entered into. They have no interest in even assimilating into their culture, let alone doing anything to keep the people who are the creators, so to speak, of that culture, no interest in keeping them in the manner that they became so accustomed to. I mean, it's, you know, two diverging, it's a cataclysm of, two colliding forces, so nothing good is coming out of that.
And you can see how when the game was fair, was really fair, when people were only getting what they earned, then the immigration was different, and there was no such a clash between the citizens and the new immigrants. Everybody was welcome because nobody expected to live off the government. Everybody, people who came here only counted on their own hard work and skills and were hoping that even if they don't succeed, their children will be in a better position to succeed.
Yeah,
eventually.
They came with the expectation
now
of having to earn their keep.
Now that we have all these social services provided by the government, then the nature of immigration also changes. So in addition to people who come here relying on their own hard work, there are also lots of people who come here to milk the system, to live off the government. And it's especially true in Europe. Like the Europeans, who is going to support them, all their pensions and long leaves and everything? What labor force? They didn't leave any behind, so they're inviting immigrants. But the immigrants who are coming to Europe now from the Middle East are not the same kind of immigrants who would work and support them, because today immigrants in Europe are lured more by the social services than by the opportunities, because those opportunities are disappearing.
Exactly, but that's no different than what's happening here, Oleg, because the majority of the immigrants or illegal aliens that are flooding this country, I should say, not the legal ones, but I'm talking about the illegal aliens flooding this country, I mean, they're here for the social services that they latch on to. They're not interested in assimilating into this culture. They're not even interested in speaking the English language. They're
right.
Not interested in anything other than the handout that they get upon arrival of their first child born on the soil of the United States. So, I mean, that's a whole unsustainable thing. They're bringing with them what they ran away from.
Yes.
You know, and they don't have the skill set to be able to even support the structure that's in place now. I mean, you're not getting the cream of the crop. They're not the most highly educated individuals with doctorate degrees or master's degrees. That's not who's rushing across the southern border of this country.
Right, and they give the other immigrants a bad name because when people do not come here to succeed but to live off the existing system without contributing to it, then, of course, that creates a whole different attitude towards immigration. So if anyone is to blame for the current tension between the citizens and the new immigrants, is the people who created this system where people no longer come to succeed by working hard, but to the I don't want to use the word parasite, but it's basically what it is.
That's exactly what it is. You know, if you're leeching off a host, you're a parasite. That's essentially, that's exactly what it is. If you want to look from biological perspective, you know, if you can't survive unless you're taking from the host, then that's exactly in biology what that would be.
If you do not share the wealth among all people, like the government is striving to do now, then nobody would care who comes. People who do not feel they can succeed, they just will not be coming here if everybody will be on their own.
Well, and no, because there would be no magnet. If you didn't have the handout, you wouldn't have the magnet that drew people to this country. And, of course, we all know why someone wants to leave a third-world cesspool. I mean, you don't need to be a Rhodes Scholar to figure that out. But the reality is the reasons why you want to leave and the reasons why you come here and what you do when you get here are, you know, they don't. It doesn't make it okay that you've done that.
Yes, and also another point here is that why the nature of immigration is changing is that people are no longer encouraged to assimilate and learn the language and become Americans by culture. They are encouraged to keep their own cultures and live in those isolated ethnic enclaves or linguistic enclaves, and they're being... Now we see all the signs in different languages, and the taxpayer money have to go to pay for those signs. And do you know who was in charge of immigration policies in the U.S. Senate for the last...
Teddy Kennedy.
More than two decades, yes.
Teddy Kennedy.
Edward Kennedy, who created this multiculturalist attitude towards immigration.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of this so-called diversity lottery?
Yep. You know what, we've only got about two more minutes, Oleg, so I'm going to, you know, is there one final thing you'd like to say in about 30 seconds, and then we need to, we're running out of time here, unfortunately. Anything you want to leave me with, or I'll just announce your website?
I cannot start another topic.
I want
to say thank you again for inviting me, and let's hope that this is not the last time.
No, not at all. Everybody,
we've
been
speaking
with Oleg Atbashian. He is the author of the book Shakedown Socialism. Go to his website and buy it. You need to read this. ShakedownSocialism.com, and he also created the website ThePeople'sCube.com. My website, three words, theunsolicitedopinion.com. Go there. Our podcast will be up. Links to Oleg's website will be up. Buy his book. It's the best Christmas present you could give yourself. Buy a couple. Pass them out. People, you need to know what this game is all about, and he spells it out as simple as 1, 2, 3. Everybody, you know I love to go to Oz. Somewhere Over the Rainbow is a wonderful place to be. So, hey, take care, everybody. Keep your chin up. There are more of us than there are of them. And Oleg, thanks again for coming on. I really appreciate it. And Merry Christmas, Oleg.
Merry Christmas to you and everybody.
Thank you. Take care, everybody.
The rainbow skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true. Someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind. Troubles melt like lemon drops away above the chimney tops. That's where you are.